I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Welcome to Fronteras, a show about issues along the U.S.-Mexico border and changing demographics in the Southwest. Every year in the tiny border town of Lajitas, Texas, located about 5 hours east of El Paso, hundreds gather to celebrate, remember, and protest the closing of the area's border passage. For decades, U.S. tourists and locals used to cross freely over the Rio Grande into Pasos Lajitas, Mexico. But that changed in May 2002, when the federal government abruptly closed the informal passage. The small community that Lajitas shared with its Mexican neighbor was cut in half. But the annual Voices from Both Sides serves as a reunion. Natalie Krebs reports on the one-day event that's now in its sixth year.
It's 100 degrees out on the day before Mother's Day. Dozens of people are cooling off in the Rio Grande. Young kids splash in the muddy water as groups of adults casually wade by. People are cooking tacos and burgers under the tents that dot the river's edge on both sides. Music fills the normally quiet valley between the Texas town of Lajitas, population 100, and its Mexican neighbor, Pasos Lajitas. I catch Jeff Hayslip selling festival t-shirts out of cardboard boxes to returning attendees.
$20, sir. How you doing? Hey, man, I remember that shirt. That was 3 years ago.
Hayslip, a long-term resident of the area, is one of the founders of the Voices from Both Sides Festival. He lives 12 miles up the road in Terlingua. Hayslip says he started the festival, also known as Fiesta Protesta, to draw attention to the impact of the border's closing. He says it changed the culture of the tight-knit community.
It's real subtle. But people that used to know each other don't know each other anymore. And that is the result of what we've done.
The first year of the festival was in 2013, more than a decade after the border was closed as part of a government crackdown on Homeland Security after 9/11. Hayslip says people were at first wary of crossing the river. It is illegal, after all.
It was, just question marks everywhere in everybody's heads, you know, because nobody knew what was going to go on.
6 years later, it appears people no longer have any reservations about crossing. Hundreds swim back and forth throughout the day. Something else has changed, Hayslip says, is that border issues are now in the national spotlight thanks to the Trump administration.
Immigration, and actually illegal immigration, is what they're interested in.
In recent weeks, the White House has deployed National Guard troops to the Texas-Mexico border. Their purpose is to free up more Border Patrol agents so they can keep a closer eye on illegal immigration. But federal agents don't appear to be keeping close tabs on this festival. Border Patrol officials say previous festivals have been without incident and don't think the community event poses a huge risk to border security. One law enforcement agency at the festival is the Brewster County Sheriff's Department, but they say they're just there to keep the peace.
The crossing back and forth from the river is not our issue. I mean, we don't enforce, you know, any kind of immigration laws and stuff like that.
Sheriff Rodney Dotson has attended the festival every year. He says he's watched it grow from around 100 people to more than 1,000 this year.
You know, this started out as a small celebration of the neighbors across the border here. And as you see, I was amazed when I stepped over the hill there and I seen all these cars. It's starting to gain great numbers.
Dotson says he remembers when the passage was closed. He says on the U.S. side, the school in Terlingua was the hardest hit.
A lot of kids came over every morning, and they took them to school here. And, you know, that was the biggest part of it, is hurting the school district.
Georgina Villa saw this firsthand. She was an 8-year-old student in Terlingua at the time.
I lost a lot of friends because of it, and I just had to see, like, a lot of homes just be abandoned whenever this happened. It was real hard.
Villa says at the time she and her mother were working towards getting their green cards. The closing meant they could no longer cross the river to see her family in San Carlos, which is just 15 miles south of the border. Federal agents kept a close eye on the area.
We couldn't even get close to the river or anything to where we could see my grandma and some of her family and my family from my parents' side as well.
Villa says because the crossing is still closed, she and her husband have to make separate trips to Terlingua and San Carlos from their home in Midland to see family. She says this is challenging with 3 young girls. But Villa says she is now a U.S. citizen and feels fortunate to be able to cross the border freely. She says friends who are under the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, or DACA, cannot. Their family members from Mexico visit them at the festival.
So they always wait for this event to come and see, I mean, their mother, their brothers or sisters or aunts or uncles.
On the Mexican side, the border's closing devastated the town of Pasos Lajitas, which depended on tourists. The 20 families living there soon moved away. It's essentially a ghost town now. Residents on both sides have to drive an hour and a half to the nearest border checkpoint to legally cross. Alpine resident James Neil Trammell swims in the Rio Grande with Abbott, his 4-year-old son. He tells me that when he was a student at nearby Sol Ross University, he visited Pasos Lajitas once a month. The experience became a sort of cultural exchange for the Fort Worth native.
We would go across and go eat enchiladas and drink Carta Blanca, and just everybody was friendly, everybody was nice. We got tutored in Spanish and we would tutor in English and we'd work it out and have a good time.
In 2013, the federal government reopened the crossing from Big Bend National Park to Boquillas del Carmen, Mexico, about 70 miles east of Lajitas. It was also closed after 9/11. It has a lone border protection agent and two automatic kiosks. Visitors cross by paying $5 to take a rowboat across the Rio Grande. But it's unclear if the crossing at Lajitas will ever reopen. The federal government hasn't given any indication it plans to do so. So for now, residents on both sides will have to settle for a one-day reunion at the Fiesta Protesta. In Lajitas, I'm Natalie Krebs.
Ranat Humaidi is a recent graduate of the University of Texas at San Antonio. She received her degree in biology and hopes to become a physician scientist. Like many college students, she overcame various obstacles to achieve her degree. Texas Public Radio's Camille Phillips tells us Humaidi's story begins in Aleppo, Syria.
We were there for about 2 years when the civil war was happening. So when it started pretty far from us. It started in Homs, and then in Damascus it spread a little bit. And then after a while, it started coming to our city. And then at that time, they started kidnapping students, mainly females sometimes, and they blackmailed their parents to pay them a lot of money. And then there was no security, there's no police. And then one of my classmates got kidnapped, and there was a lot of bombings and all that death and what I saw on. But at that point, my parents decided that going to school is not worth it. If I'm going to get kidnapped or tortured or whatever. So I stayed at home until it was in the January. So it was a whole semester of me staying home and not going to school until we left the city.
After a semester barricaded at home in Aleppo, Humaidi enrolled in high school in San Antonio.
I came here as a senior. I didn't speak English. I was placed in ESL classes. No one talked to me, actually. I was that foreign student in the middle of the class. At that time of my life, we were hearing a lot of bad news back home. A lot of my friends passed away. It was just an awful, awful period of my life. I couldn't prove myself in school because people thought, since I don't speak English, I don't know the subject, even though math is a universal language.
She chose UTSA so she could live at home with her family.
I watched a lot of Grey's Anatomy that year, and it's true, you learn a lot of English just based on TV. So a lot of the words that are not mentioned in Grey's Anatomy, I don't know them. At that point in college, I was picking up English very quickly. I think college was completely different just because when I started, big classrooms, no one knew each other, so I was like everyone else, and basic chemistry was the class that I loved. Professor Doherty gave me a lot of attention at that time. And just because of that, I believed in myself because someone else believed in me.
After her sophomore year in college, Humaidi asked UTSA professor Michael Doyle to be her research advisor.
And she said, you know, I'd like to work in your laboratory. And she then proceeded to do everything that a human being is not possible to do. She's extremely independent, wants to be the very best at what she can be. And in the future, I think you're going to see her at the top of any list of people who have been very, very successful coming out of San Antonio.
These days, she says she tries not to let news out of Syria, like the suspected chemical weapons attack on Douma, overwhelm her.
When I moved here, and I watched the news a lot and got so, so depressed. So I don't watch it to that extent anymore. whatever happened recently, I watched, and I had a lot of assignments going on, a lot of school going on, and that night I cried so much and I got so depressed, so I stopped watching the news again.
Instead, she's looking ahead to graduation on Saturday and her move to Boston to be a research assistant.
I didn't know if I want to do a medical school or I'm going to go to a straight-up PhD or do both, so I decided to do a two-year post-bac program. I'm going to the Broad Institute of Harvard MIT starting in the end of summer.
She wants to spend her career researching disease.
Because I like to do something for a greater purpose. Sometimes when we do methodology, I lose the purpose of why we're doing it. However, when I did like a summer internship, I knew I'm doing something for cancer, lung cancer at that time, and I just loved the fact that I'm doing something and greater impact right away.
Humaydi says she's excited to work in the labs at the Broad Institute.
Because when I went there for 2 days, and I saw everyone so focused, and the lab had so many instruments. There's expensive instruments, and they're like toys to a lot of scientists.
She's also looking forward to Boston's colder weather. Camille Phillips, Texas Public Radio News.
When we come back, we'll go on a tour of West Side San Antonio.
That statue that you see there is a statue of General Ignacio Zaragoza. And everybody's heard of Cinco de Mayo, right? Everybody thinks it's a beer-drinking holiday, but it's not.
That's coming up next on Fronteras. Stay with us. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Welcome back to Fronteras. The West Side of San Antonio, or El West Side, as residents call it, is a predominantly Hispanic working-class neighborhood. It's also one of the poorest in Bexar County. But it's a neighborhood connected by corner stores, shotgun houses, theaters, and most importantly, its people. The West Side became segregated and economically stifled by the interstate system in the 1960s, which effectively cut it off from nearby downtown. And later urban renewal efforts led to the destruction of decades-old buildings and homes. When a 1920s-era service station and dance hall known as La Gloria was demolished in 2002, it galvanized the community to save its remaining structures. That's where the West Side Preservation Alliance and the Esperanza Peace and Justice Center stepped in. They insist the preservation of old working-class structures is vital for protecting the community's culture and history. On a chilly day in April, the Esperanza hosted a walking tour of the West Side to introduce newcomers and reintroduce former West Siders to the neighborhood. The tour was led by Esperanza volunteer Javier Sanchez. Sanchez led a group of about a dozen people to some popular West Side landmarks, such as J.T. Brackenridge Elementary School, known as La 21 to many West Siders. It was named after a Confederate Army veteran and bank president. Former West Sider Elia Garcia remembers her days attending the elementary school.
When I went to J.T. Brackenridge, I loved baseball.
Uh-huh.
And I would run to my house on Colorado Street, 708, at lunchtime. And I would run, and I would come back. Because if you got to the baseball field first, uh-huh, you got to be better.
The tour then passed by small wooden houses in various states of disrepair and repair, bordered by wire fencing and populated by curious porch cats.
It's hard to see these houses right here, but these are what you call shotgun houses. There's five of them. There's one, two, three, four, five. There's one that comes out in the city directory that was built in 1912. So the other ones were all together by 1951.
Shotgun houses are long wood-framed homes, multiple rooms deep but only one room wide. Supposedly, you can fire a shotgun from the front to the back of the house without hitting any structures. Our next stop is across the street from a bubblegum pink painted brick building decorated with a few scrawls of graffiti. La Popular Bakery has been a staple of the West Side for over 40 years, but tour leader Javier Sanchez says the building itself has been here longer.
The building has been in existence for over 90 years, and it's had about three owners. Right now, La Popular Bakery, it's a chain of Mexican bakeries that took over the business, and they still have some nice bread in there. In my opinion, a little bit more expensive than they should, but... Oh, you agree? I bought a donut there about 3 days ago. They charged me $1 for the donut. Yeah, it was crazy.
All along the tour, one notices that some of the buildings are prominently adorned by large photographic portraits of people who lived on the West Side decades ago. And Sanchez points out a banner on a building next door to a church. The photo is of a young, just married couple. The man stands straight and proud. The young woman looks a little shy.
My parents. Enrique and Isabel Sanchez, they were married in August the 21st of 1949. Back then, you would get married at 7 o'clock in the morning.
Get it started.
So, you know, you get up real early in the morning, you come and get married, and then you go to the photographers downtown. The whole thing was done by 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And then my parents went on their honeymoon to Laredo, Texas. Yes. Yeah, my parents are still very active. My mother is 93, right?
Wow.
94. My mom will be 95 in July. Mm. And my dad will be 90 in August.
Mm.
And they're still very, very active.
The tour then stops at the Santuario de Nuestra Señora de Guadalupe, or Our Lady of Guadalupe Church, a reddish-brown brick structure constructed in 1926 to serve the West Side's poor Spanish-speaking population. The church's first Jesuit pastor, Father Carmelo Tranquesi, brought nationwide attention to the neighborhood, which had been fighting for the construction of housing units.
Back then, Father Tranquesi, again, got on in his letter-writing campaign, and he contacted Eleanor Roosevelt.
Yes.
And Eleanor Roosevelt came on March the 19th, 1939, and walked the streets.
After her visit, Roosevelt was able to secure federal funding for the construction of the Alazan Courts public housing units. Across from the church is an open-air plaza with public seating, a children's play area, and a large bronze statue. This is the Plaza Guadalupe. Pope John Paul II made an appearance at the plaza in 1987. Barack Obama was there during a campaign stop in 2008.
That statue that you see there is a statue of General Ignacio Zaragoza. And everybody's heard of Cinco de Mayo, right? Everybody thinks it's a beer-drinking holiday, but it's not. General Zaragoza, he led the Mexican army against the French Expeditionary Forces. Okay. Back in 1862, and then, of course, May the 5th, 1862, that statue was a gift from the government of Mexico, and it's there. I think it's missing the sword, right?
Yeah.
It's missing the sword.
The statue is missing its sword, probably due to vandalism. But that's not the only thing about the plaza that catches the eye. It's completely surrounded by a chain-link fence. It's empty and quiet, except for the passing traffic and the birds. The Guadalupe Plaza has been closed off to the public since 2016 to deter crime. Westside San Antonio is often characterized as violent and crime-ridden, but Westsiders say that's not true. One woman on the tour chimes in.
You know, we live here. We never see that, yeah. I mean, there's bad elements in every community.
Here's tour guide Javier Sanchez.
You look around and it might... It looks depressing sometimes, but you got to think about the West Side as not being dead, because in my opinion, it's not dead.
Part of the purpose of this tour is to have visitors see with fresh eyes that the West Side is more than just a stereotype. It's about the stories and the people who live and lived there. Graciela Sanchez is director of the Esperanza Peace and Justice Center, which sponsored the tour. She's also sister of tour guide Javier Sanchez. Graciela says nobody else is going to tell those stories.
And sadly, again, who's going to write about it? Half of our job is just getting people engaged and, again, learning to love and respect themselves and saying, yeah, we deserve this and we need to write it. If we don't do it, who else is going to do it?
San Antonio resident Cecilia Margaret Garza Spencer grew up on the West Side with her six siblings.
A lot of family and culture and history, and there's a lot of intelligence in our culture. And as you know, we are a marginal culture now, you know, and Mexico wouldn't accept us, nor did the U.S. So we developed our own culture here, our own cultures of language and art and history and food and dance.
She came on the tour to learn more about her community.
I was raised in the West Side, but we never learned in our schools about the Mexican culture. I mean, they taught me that my ancestors were the pilgrims. I used to come home and tell my mother, she'd look at me like, what? And there's a lot I need to learn still. I'm 67 years old, and one is always learning.
Tour guide Javier Sanchez hopes the community continues to learn the stories of the West Side.
These tours, what the Esperanza does is not to talk about the past, but to see about preserving the future and sharing what was. So history and culture are not static. The neighborhoods are always changing. They're changing as we stand here. It is becoming rather than is.
Garza Spencer, the one who thought she was descended from pilgrims, is part of that changing story. She lives on the outskirts of town now, but says she's moving back to the West Side to move into her late sister's century-old home. Thanks for joining us this week on Fronteras. You can find the show under the Programs tab on our website, tpr.org, and wherever you get your podcasts. Norma Martinez and Jerry Quijano produced the broadcast. Our executive producers are Steve Short and Fernando Ortiz. Our digital editor is Vince Kong. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.